the January panel of the Court of Appeals. We do only have two cases on the call. The other cases have been resolved either by oral argument or agreement of the parties. So with that, we will begin with our first case. I will announce each name twice for purposes of these cases being recorded. I don't think we have any cases anymore that have any confidential or personal matters, but do remember if there is anything, these are being broadcast live and they're also being archived video and audio. So with that, we'll begin with our first case, Suther versus Bryan. Suther versus Bryan.
May it please the court, my name is Bryan Koenig, and I represent Amy Suthar, the appellant in this matter. Ms. Suthar is a plaintiff in a personal injury action, the personal injury action against Jessica Bryan, in which Allstate intervened challenging the sufficiency of my client's service of Ms. Bryan by certified mail. The background facts are not complicated in this case. The firm that was engaged prior to me attempted to serve Ms. Bryan at the address she provided to the police at the time of the accident, but could not locate her at such address. Consequently, that firm sent a certified letter to the address of her mother, an address at which Ms. Bryan received mail from medical providers, doctors, and also an address at which she received her Social Security disability payments. This was an address known to the government to be the address of Ms. Bryan. Ms. Bryan's mother, Suzanne, received the certified letter that contained the summons and the complaint and signed for the same.
Can I back you up for a second? You indicated that Ms. Bryan provided the police with this address?
No, Ms. Bryan provided the other address to the police as part of the police report of the accident report.
Mm-hmm.
The firm prior to my involvement attempted to serve her at such address, but the service attempt came back undeliverable, unable to locate her, no forwarding address provided, and that's actually an exhibit to the Bill of Exceptions in this case.
So is there any evidence that Ms. Bryan herself provided the address that certified mail was sent to anyone, that she's the one that initiated that information?
She certainly has provided it to somebody because she receives her disability payments there. Those don't just show up, I don't think, to a random address.
Wasn't the testimony that her mother provided that information?
Well, I think her mother and her jointly provided that information. I don't think you can say that her mother only provided that information when she's an adult and she receives her disability benefits there, and that's where she goes to get those benefits.
So, but are the benefits, she had been receiving them at this house since she was a minor?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. And how are the benefits, aren't the benefits added to a card that her mother has?
That was the testimony.
So what is the evidence that anyone other than the mother provided that information?
I'm not sure there's any evidence that anybody besides the mother provided that information initially, but she has certainly acquiesced in having those benefits sent to that address. Additionally, medical providers, the evidence was that medical providers also sent communications to her at that address. And the testimony was that she had recently seen those medical providers within the last year, so certainly within the time that she was the age of majority, she had actually been receiving her communications from the medical providers at such address. So certainly she was acquiescing in receiving mail at that address from her medical providers as well, if not affirmatively providing that address to her medical providers. Furthermore, I don't think that's the standard here. Based on this court's case law, it is quite clear that a familial relationship, when there's no other address to locate a defendant, is sufficient to apprise that defendant of the pendency of the lawsuit. It's reasonably calculated to apprise the defendant of the pendency of the lawsuit. That is the standard by which due process is held to be satisfied or unsatisfied.
Well, but the cases that talk about receipt by a familial person, don't those also contain, like, the probation one where the defendant has actually provided that address to his probation officer?
Certainly somebody had provided that address to his probation officer. The question in that case, though, is, was there any other alternative address? There wasn't any other alternative address. Here, she had, Ms. Bryan had provided an address, and Ms. Suthar attempted to serve Ms. Bryan at such address. But she was no longer located there, so the only other address, and that's the testimony, the only other address that anybody could find for Ms. Bryant was this address that she was receiving her Social Security disability benefits and that she was receiving mail from her medical providers. And the testimony is that she also returns there periodically, that her mother lives there permanently. I don't know how else anyone could say that this was not the best possible way to be reasonably calculated in how to apprise her pendency of this particular lawsuit.
Do we know if in determining whether service is reasonably calculated to provide notice, if at the time it's served, is that something that the plaintiff has to know, that this address is reasonably calculated to provide citizen notice?
I think it's a totality of the circumstances test. I think it's the best alternative here. Clearly, publication was not a reasonable alternative. As we all know, publication is of last resort, and that's what they're alleging that should have been done here. Clearly, that was less reasonably calculated to apprise her of the pendency of this lawsuit than was serving her mother at the address that she received her money that she relied on for everyday living expenses. I don't know how there's any other reasonable way you were going to apprise her of the pendency of this lawsuit other than serving her mother at this address. Serving or trying to publish service was never going to, was not reasonably calculated to apprise her of the pendency of the lawsuit. Serving her mother certainly was. And as this court stated in the Dominic case, a familial relationship is of utmost importance in determining whether or not it's reasonably calculated to apprise the defendant of service. If there are no further questions at this time, I reserve the remaining portion of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel for the intervener below the appellee in this action. It is the contention of my client that the service in this instance was improper. It was insufficient. And consistent with the prior rulings of this court and the Nebraska Supreme Court, was clearly insufficient. But let's look at some of the facts that I believe may have been inadvertently misrepresented moments ago. At the time of the service, the attempted service we're involved in was on Jessica Bryan. The record is clear. They did not know that the mother resided at that address at that time. That was learned later. The facts of this case are that this accident happened on September 10th of 2010. The lawsuit was filed 2 days before the running of what would have been the statute of limitations on September 8th of 2014. When the service was attempted here, they attempted because they got an address from a website of some type, something called TLO, I believe was the initials identified in the record. Now, I could go all day online and find various addresses for someone, and I can take a stab in the dark that this one or that one was accurate, as in some of those cases, for instance, the Domino case that was identified, where for some reason they served but 12 of the 15 available addresses, and not even the one that they had been billing their client on the post office box. In this case, they sent out a summons to Jessica at an address they got where Brian was there. In fact, someone whose last name was Brian signed for. Even at that point, they did not know that that was the mother. They find that out later. So it could kind of suggest that this was a recently calculated service, but he did not have any knowledge of that. And simply for serendipity or fortuitous event, it turned out to be a mother, but an estranged mother who had had no contact with this now adult child for 4 years. A child who had no prior contact or connection to the address that mother lived at, which was not mom's residence, but rather a place she was allowed to live as a caretaker for the adults, the yet older adults that lived there. I understand that there was an attempt to serve her at an address that she had identified at the time 4 years before in the police report. The record is not of any specific information as to exactly what the nature of that address and its connection to Ms. Bryan would have been those 4 years before. Hence my reference to the fact they waited almost to the expiration of the statute of limitations before attempting that service. But then there's been no investigation because 2 days later they did attempt the service at the address that they decided to rely upon. And what's really interesting is that was about 2 days after the filing of this action. The return coming about 10 days later and being placed on the record still in September 2010. And then without any follow-up and any confirmation, well, is this a Brian that has any connection with this individual? They let the 6 months or the balance of the 6 months, virtually the entire 6 months, pass. And even then did not take any action. In fact, as a practicing attorney, I found that kind of odd because you would think 30, maybe 60 days, certainly 90 days, they might either have explored, did we actually get effective service? Or if they are confident of that, why are they not fighting during that time for a default judgment? In fact, it's not until over a year and a quarter later, as I attempted to intervene, recognizing as we had just received a claim for the underinsured benefits in what is at issue in another action, that this needed to be looked at, and it is far too late now to do anything for it, because the statute of limitations has run, the 6 months had already run that you were allowed to serve. It put us in a position where any attempt at subrogation, should we have to pay benefits, is totally gone. They did not engage in due diligence during that 6 month period in any sense. And now we ask this court to overlook the fact that in all those cases where service was left with a family member, it is because the address at which service was acted on was in some manner identified by the underlying defendant as the basis for that address. For instance, there's the Nebraska Supreme Court cases of State versus Diablo, where that defendant gave the address where grandma was served as his address, registering it with the state of Nebraska to his probation officer. So there would be a rational basis to say, that is where we should go and serve this individual.
Counsel, do you agree or disagree that there were medical providers who were using this address?
One set up by mother during the minority, no indication whatsoever of any connection of these records going to this now adult child who is out of state, who has had no connection with this address. Mom testified in the deposition that was taken well after our involvement at our behest that was all set up by her. And the junk mail that they say she received, no, that was junk mail that arrived at that address that mom identified to people over the years when this individual never had any connection, Jessica Bryan, to that address. So all of that was junk mail that arrived there, not received by her. The Social Security benefits go onto a card that she has presumably separate access to, because Mom was clear she had not known where this child was for years, since before this accident, if memory serves, certainly for some years in any event. And this child never had any connection. And I say child, let's not think of a minor. This is an adult, an independent individual. And we have suggested that in this type of situation, where the lack of certainty, the lack of diligence regarding services so apparent, so palpable, yes, they should have acted on what the legislature has provided, service by publication. And they want to say, well, in this day and age, who reads? Well, that remains what the legislature, sure, has provided as the appropriate means of service in this sort of situation. It was available to them. It should have been availed of them and taken advantage of. They did not. And yet now they would ask you to bail them out of this problem of their own making, a problem they would pass on to my client, and that's just inappropriate because we would then not be, we would not be left with our remedy.
What does the record reflect as to the age of the defendant?
At the time of the accident, I believe that she had already hit majority, but I candidly, I'd have to check the record on that point. All I know is, with the years that passed, she was hit majority, had left the state, was living independently, was estranged from her mother for years, had no connection at any time with this property. The only connection with this property would be ones based on actions taken by the mother at some point in time in dealing with a few health care providers, but nothing by the actions of this individual. And to consider this good service would fly in the face of those precedents by this court and by the Nebraska Supreme Court, where when there's a familial connection as being the basis, the assertion for that, in those cases, it's really clear. The only reason that works is because of action taken by the true defendant to identify that that is where you can contact me, serve me, whatever, as in the Tiago case that I cited, as in the Capital One Bank case. Let's talk about that briefly for a few moments. In Capital One, an individual who set up an account with the party that eventually became the plaintiff, identifying an address, did leave that address 2 months before as they were becoming estranged from their husband. But having established that business relationship and saying, here's where you can send my statements, here's where you can contact me, did not update that account information. Well, again, you have the defendant being the one to identify the significance of the subject residence, the one that's at issue in that case. And that's why that would be reasonable to take action, as was done there, and serve that person there.
Does
that
it matter
is missing
that,
in this action.
Does it matter that the daughter subsequently went to that residence, was no longer estranged from her mother?
Well, if the standard is reasonably calculated, that has to be judged from what was known and acted on at the time of the attempted service. The fact that a year later, and well after all of the problems of the dismissal of the case, but before we take the deposition of this woman, the daughter had come back, had some sort of rapprochement with mother, and had spent a few weeks there. That's nothing that shows a connection back in the era that's involved here, well prior to this. So no, do you think that the plaintiff counsel said, some years from now, she's going to get back together with mom and have some meaningful time with her at that address? No. If the standard is reasonably calculated to apprise the defendant of what was then a contemporaneous action, that must be judged by what was known. And they didn't even know mom was resident there at the time that they started the service. They just got something back that said, Brian, on the end of it. In this case, that's far too many Brians in it. But in any event, I suggest to you that you're about to set a standard, or rather build on the existing standard. And are we going to say a shot in the dark is good enough? I see that I am out of time. Soon to be out of town. May I briefly sum up? You're about to set a standard. You're about to say, in an opinion, what passes as acceptable service. When there is the alternative of service by publication provided for by the legislature, I don't think that this lack of diligence should be rewarded, and that we should tell individuals any service or any address you might get on the website or a website
found, you know, again, back to the dominant case where they evidently got 15 through such a source. Why, go ahead and just hope for the best, and that's good enough. No, that does not satisfy due process. Thank you.
Okay. How long did it take Mr. Nolan over? Could you add that to the appellant's statement?
I think the most important fact here today is that the defendant did indeed receive notice of the lawsuit from her mother. It's clear from her mother's deposition testimony that she did, in fact, know that her mother was going to be deposed, and she was staying with her at the exact time that she was being deposed. So I don't know how you could say that it's not reasonably calculated to apprise somebody of the pendency of the lawsuit when she did, in fact, receive the notice eventually from her mother prior to a default being entered.
Well, does that notice have to come within 6 months?
That's an interesting question. I don't think it matters as long as it comes before a default is entered. Furthermore, I don't think that publication in this instance would likely meet the requirements of due process. Mr. Nolan has suggested that publication is the appropriate means to ensure that she is served. Well, it still must meet the requirements of due process, which I don't believe it would here. Because just shooting a shot in the dark with a publication is not going to satisfy due process in this respect. Furthermore, he cites the Capital One case for the proposition that the individual in that case provided the address to Capital One. There was no testimony to that effect. Presumably that was the case, but there was no testimony or evidence taken in that case that she actually provided that address to Capital One. And so clearly the Court of Appeals did not rely on that fact as a determinative factor to find that she would have had to have provided that notice or that address so they could provide notice. In Capital One, there's also this strange relationship between a wife and a husband, which is analogous to this circumstance, although I would say that the relationship here is actually much stronger than the relationship between the wife and estranged husband in Capital One. And furthermore, in Capital One, like I said, I think it's really important to go back and note that there is no evidence in there that she actually provided that address to Capital One. Now, presumably that's what happened, but I don't think that was the piece of evidence that the court relied on in making that determination.
Counsel, I know you're at a disadvantage because you haven't been involved in this case, but it appears that after the alleged service was made, no answer was filed. The period of time that went by, nothing happened. So finally, the 6 months had expired. Don't you think it's strange that that?
I also think it's strange that Allstate waited until the 6 months had expired to intervene. I don't think sleeping on your rights for that long a period of time, when they could have done it immediately, should afford them any additional rights. My understanding is that it was.